I remember when I owned everything. The sun and the moon and the rain. And my domain stretched and yawned along the astral plane. The universe is a toy in the mind of a boy. And life is a movie too, starring you. Your whole family's the cast and crew. That's a little secret between God and you. But ain't it strange how it all makes perfect sense? Once your life becomes evidence of the need to feel, love is more than real.
Like a freakish collision of selfish genes selfishly promoting their own individual interests? Well, maybe. But sometimes those interests are collective. But that phrase, man, survival of the fittest, man, that's a phrase that's easily twisted by anybody who's out to justify the meager existence that some people live with. It's a phrase often enlisted by parasites who are eager to benefit from these differences. So, like, in the 19th century, it was aristocratic eugenics. In the 20th century, genocidal menaces used survival of the fittest to justify their death sentences. And gangsters still use it today to degrade their victims. Not to mention the purveyors of disaster capitalism. See, these are all examples of social Darwinism. But none of this is based on scientific evidence. Merely saying that something exists in a state of nature doesn't give it a moral basis. Man, that's a false correlation. Sometimes competition increases motivation. But evolution is also based on cooperation. Just ask the Dictyocelian nation. Say that. See, it's like bacteria combine into eukaryotic cells and then become like organelles within those symbiotic shells. And there's like 50 trillion of those in our individual cells. So we're all like physical spaces where creative collectives dwell. And this applies to the societies that we erect as well. Because survival of the fittest also applies to groups. And the fittest group just makes the best combined moves. So can we all just get along? Whatever we try and do. Man, group selection just puts me in an altruistic mood. Like, yeah, love thy neighbor. What's that? You need some sugar? Okay, come by later. Of course I'll do you a favor. Why is that? Because I've got the compassion of a vampire bat. If you need some food, I'll do what I can. It doesn't matter if we're not related. You're still my man. You're still my sister. I feel high, man. This universal love is good stuff. God damn! And you don't have to reciprocate either. Because karma is a sophisticated teacher. And karma isn't just like energy waves in the ether. Nah, karma's in the way that everyone hates a cheater. Cheater detection will keep you in check if you jump cues and refuse to treat people respectfully. So go ahead, take what you want. Run me down. Because I believe what goes around comes around. Liars and thieves and those who try to deceive get dealt with by the immune systems of society. And survival of the fittest? Don't let it baffle you. Because fitness isn't fitness. Nah, fitness is aptitude. Aptitude between the environment and whatever's adapted to it. And in social animals like us, aptitude means attitude. And my attitude is there's nothing we can't do as a human family group as long as we have rules to keep cheaters in check. I figure we can't lose. Man, we could go to the moon and back this afternoon as long as what's bad for me is also bad for you. So let's just all get together and have some food and put an end to this endless feud. Is that cool? Is that cool?
Toxins. Panacea strong. Tell your next door neighbor, life is very long. Afterthoughts now echo in the inner brain. What was I just thinking, trying to explain? Had to do with get there, place I've never been. In the great hereafter, how do things begin? Never been to total, not that I recall. Big is awful scary, more at home in small. Constantly the changing greets the blinking eye. I don't know the reason, why is asking why. What if you do get there? Nobody's there, just you and the empty way up there somewhere. You look down the distance at all that has been to see if you see how you used to fit in. What if everything? place around. There you'll be in empty, lost in lost and found. Once I went to stupid, stayed a dozen days. Bungle was my roommate, taught me bungle ways. Don't pay close attention, bite your lower lip. Practice hard of hearing, teach your tongue to slip. Slippery will take you down a sneaky street. God won't give a damn, history will repeat. Every time you go there, something will go wrong. You can bet your bottom. Sing another song. Reach the edge of reason. Stare into its face. Stars are holes in heaven. Dreaming. Inner space.
In agony and asked, why? And then a face appeared. It was a composite of everyone who had ever wagged their finger at me. It said,
"You're here because you were a bad mortal."
And I replied, "I wasn't convinced that I was immortal solely to be well behaved." And it said,
"How could you miss the signs? They were everywhere. Be good, don't be bad. Be nice, don't be mean. Do right, don't do wrong. Share everything. Don't be stingy."
Yeah, I saw the signs, but I thought they were just part of the game.
Game? Why isn't it game? It's serious business. It's an education.
But for what? What are we going to do with the education?
We're all going to live in spiritual peace and harmony.
And do what?
Bask in the glory of our God who is pleased with the behavior and condition of his creations.
But what does that mean in concrete terms? Does it mean we will sing songs of praise for the rest of eternity like a bunch of sycophants?
I don't think I like the tone of your question.
And how is it that we aren't already living in spiritual peace and harmony?
Because life started as chaos with the intention of stabilizing. The only way it can stabilize is if all spirits get along peacefully and harmoniously. This means they have to be trained to be nice and kind and unselfish.
But aren't all spirits eternally indestructible? Aren't they perfectly equal and equally perfect?
Potentially, yes, but you have to earn it. You have to prove you are worthy of indestructibility and perfection.
But how?
By living a perfect mortal life. All that is required is that you live one perfect mortal existence to at least the age of 33. You can reincarnate as many times as you need to.
What do you mean by perfect?
Completely kind and nice and unselfish. Just like Jesus Christ. Haven't you been listening?
You said I can reincarnate as much as I need to. You didn't say I have to. What if I don't want to?
Then you can spend eternity in a nightmare, Mr. Semantical Smartass.
Hey, that's not a very nice name to call me.
You're a horrible and stubborn little creature, but God still loves you.
Where is he? I want to talk to him.
He's right here, but you can't see him because you are blinded by your lack of kindness and niceness and unselfishness.
I want to know why he didn't make us nice and kind and unselfish at the start.
Because all creation begins chaotically and then slowly comes together.
That may be true of physical things like a mortal universe, but it shouldn't be true of spiritual things.
Why not? And who are you, you pipsqueaky, insolent little jerk? Who are you to say what is true or not true about things that are spiritual?
How dare you? Listen, you've called me some names that aren't very nice. That to me seems imperfect.
You're too egotistical to know what is or isn't perfect. Besides, I never claimed to be perfect. I just happened to be more advanced than you. That's all. I didn't spend my last incarnation being a foul-mouthed, hedonistic, blaspheming, amoral, thick-headed radical who squandered his God-given talent as a writer by writing dirty little books full of spiritual misinformation. Shame on you.
You know, it just occurred to me that I am in this nightmare because I feared that I would be. But if I learned anything as a mortal, it was that fear is a lie. It only appears powerful as long as I don't challenge it. The instant that I realize or remember that nothing real can be threatened by anything or anyone, and that I am real, then fear becomes instantly powerless.
So what?
I'll tell you what, you fear spreader, I owe you nothing. There is no God. There is only the life force, and it is not separate from its contents or aspects. There is not an it and then a me. There is not a creator and its creations. It and me are one and the same. It doesn't control me, and I don't control it. There is no separation between it and me. We are one, like droplets in an ocean. There is not an ocean and then something separate from it called droplets. One cannot exist without the other. There is only the ocean of droplets. There is only life.
Oh, what a load of Zen gibberish.
And the droplets are perfectly equal and equally perfect. They are all made of the same stuff. Each is capable of dreaming it has evaporated. And each is capable of waking up and precipitating back to the ocean. Mortal life is but a droplet that has dreamed it has evaporated from the ocean. But it's only a dream. It and the ocean are still as one. The truth never changes. And since there is no actual separation between the ocean and its droplets, then it cannot be said that the ocean misses the droplets when they are dreaming of having evaporated. And it cannot be said that the ocean cares one little bit about what kind of dream the droplets are having. And it cannot be said that there is a right way or a wrong way for the droplets to behave while they are dreaming. The ocean and the droplets are one. They are never separated. One did not give birth to the other, and therefore one cannot rule over the other. They, as one, have always existed. Life is life. It exists. It lives as a whole, composed of many, each perfectly equal and equally perfect. If life ever appears to be anything different, then it's a dream. And all dreams end happily because they end. What is the one miracle of life? That we can dream. Without being able to dream, you can't know life. If all you have ever known is white, then you can't know it is white. If all you have ever known is bliss, then you can't know it is bliss.
Escapes, Winston. There are no martyrs here. All the confessions made here are true. We do not destroy the heretic because he resists us. As long as he resists us, we never destroy him. We make him one of ourselves before we kill him. We make his brain perfect before we blow it out. And then, when there is nothing left, but soil and love, big brother. We shall lift you clean out of history. We shall turn you into gas and pour you into the stratosphere. Nothing will remain of you. Not a name in a register. Not a memory in a living brain. You will be annihilated in the past as well as in the future.
you didn't like school, and you know what it's for.
What's inside of each and every one of us here in this room, what we mistakenly call our thoughts, our feelings, and our dreams, have actually been put there by a system. Therefore,
what's inside is just a lie.
Our minds have been invaded, conquered, and occupied, hence,
what's inside is just a lie.
And like a catchy refrain that gets trapped in your head,
what's inside is just a lie.
Uh-huh. Like a catchy refrain that gets trapped in your head. Somebody else's desires get lodged in your brain. And so the only way to become your true self
is starting to feel real.
You gotta create your own self.
Oh, it's starting to feel real. Starting to feel real. Starting to feel real.
You turn your life into a work of art.
Starting to feel real.
Searching for is in the beauty of these burning streets. A song I couldn't write yesterday, but today, destiny, till Mayday gave me the courage to be.
Only love is real.
I write a song called Evolution. But Mayday gave me the courage to bleed.
I wanted you. And I was looking for you. But I couldn't find you. I wanted you. And I was looking for you all day. But I couldn't find you. I couldn't find you. You're walking, and you don't always realize it, but you're always falling. With each step, you fall forward slightly, and then catch yourself from falling. Over and over, you're falling, and then catching yourself from falling. And this is how you can be walking and falling at the same time.
Let's talk about time. In has always been a big and small part. puzzled knee. We know that now is everywhere at once, no matter where we are. Damn, if it isn't always and forever now. But when you think of measuring the essence of what right now is, there's immediately a problem. How long does any particular now last? A blink of your eyes? A snap of your fingers? The click of a switch? Think of the shortest amount of time you can think of. Like a nanosecond. 1/1,000,000,000th of a second is all it is. But when you think about how long a sliver of time that short actually is, you have to measure it from its beginning to its end. It does have a history. Brief as it is, it has to have. And if you could somehow stretch that nanosecond so you could see it, you'd see that it does have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Just like the teachers tell you. How far do you think the speed of light can go in a nanosecond? 1 foot, that's how far. 1 foot. A guy I trust told me, at the speed of light, about 186,300 miles per second, light can travel 1 foot in 1 nanosecond. Anything a foot long does have a history. And we haven't even looked at picoseconds, or attoseconds, or zeptoseconds. Maybe now, the all-at-once now, is different. Maybe now doesn't have any length. And that's why it's impossible to write its history. It's way beyond the craft of historians, because it's timeless. It's outside of time. Maybe that's where whatever it is we call God hangs out. So, now is where we are. Looking back from this evanescent vantage, this moment of on and off concentration, trying to remember bits and pieces what happened over so long a distance of time, comes a nagging feeling that even with the best of luck, I will only be able to resurrect little fragments of the why and the how and the where and the when and under what circumstances everything would become what it had to become. Part of the immense necessity, the awesome nature of fate, as if there is some unwritten law written somewhere that we can't read, that governs the way things are, the way they have to be, possessed by some irrevocable unwinding. Nor only your piety or wit can change a line of it. Remember that. You can do nothing about it. It's just the way it is. Is being is inside of is, forever creating an immediate crowd of was, or maybe we should say was, inside of was, stretching off into the far away of all that used to be, and all as automatic as the tilt and wobble of this old, old earth we spend our short, long lives on. Spinning around the nuclear warmth of stormy sun that some say will burn out uncountable nows from now. Now after now, like clockwork, measuring all of the light and dark moment of his always becoming was. That huge, very real, imaginary past where everything is in back of us, always fading off into forgettable eons of yesterdays. Now is perpendicular to eternity. Sorry, I didn't mean to be so blunt. But since I'm close to the edge, I have to say what I have to say before time runs out. Who knows what endings are in store? I'd like to be a believer, as so many are, even without proof, that God, the one and only, is in his always capitalized heaven, looking out for what's going on everywhere, with everything, including you and me. Wouldn't that be nice? Everything happening as it has to happen, because God has everything put on autopilot, and we have to go along with whatever has been set in motion, whether it's to our liking or not. You've heard it said that you have to have faith. How many times have we been told that things will work out, that we should go with the ebb and flow?
Primary thing that I come back to, you know, I share a lot of this information in detail that we've touched on briefly here today, but the thing that I always end up coming back to over and over and over again for people is to trust their feelings. We've been taught to not trust the wisdom of our bodies. A lot of people have written about that, but we're also taught to not trust our feelings, that is, if somehow our body and our feelings are antithetical, they're our enemies or something. And it's quite the opposite. Goethe made a great point. He says it makes a wonderful difference if you find in your body an ally or an enemy. Any part of us that we denigrate will come back to us as an enemy eventually. So we must know ourselves in that way and realize that we're ecologically designed to be the way we are. Our bodies are a portal to the world because they are of the world. And that the capacities we have for sensing the world are built in, designed over long evolutionary time. And one of the most important of those is our capacity to feel. Because without feeling, life is not worth living. And any culture based on a lack of feeling is exceptionally non-sustainable. So it comes down to, in the end, that people should trust their feelings. And I put that into a poem that I particularly like, that there is one place in all of the world made especially for you, and it is inside your own feet.
Only love is real.
Did you hear her when she said,
only love is real?
Did you hear her when she said,
only love is real?
Flesh, as a color, is in an awful mess. Yes. Ask anyone with flesh. They'll tell you. Flesh, as a color, is about as close to a problem as a color can get. Some people think the only color flesh color should be is the color their flesh color is, which, pure and simple, is color-centric thinking. Popular in some corners. But you and I know, though, that the proper color for flesh to be is the proper color it is, varying from complexion to complexion. But if black flesh and white flesh and brown flesh and red flesh and yellow flesh and tan flesh, if all the fleshes that are flesh want to establish a sensible similarity among differences, we'd better forget the flesh and the colors it can be and think on the spirit and its singular light. Otherwise, flesh as a color could be black and blue or even a bloody hue.
The thing about the heart, what's interesting is that when you begin to pay attention to how things feel and that kind of exchange of energy, the heart begins to be reactivated as an organ of perception, which in indigenous and ancient cultures, they had developed to a fairly high level of sophistication in some cases, because it was assumed they developed it the way we've developed our brains. Now, research has been showing, for instance, a lot of interesting things about the heart. Like, most people are taught that the heart is a pump that pumps the blood around the system. And so some physicists actually did this really interesting study of the vessels and their length and the amount of pressure and everything. And they found through their calculations that to pump the blood around the body, the heart would actually have to be capable of shooting a 100-pound weight a mile high in the air, which of course it cannot do. And they found that the blood, kind of counterintuitively, it moves of its own accord around the body, and the heart plays a much more subtle role. It stabilizes that pumping motion that occurs, and it does a lot of other things. The heart's a very powerful endocrine organ. It produces hormones that affect all physiological functioning in the body in very subtle ways, and it's also a very powerful electromagnetic generator and receiver, in that all organisms have unique electromagnetic signatures. Every element of the periodic table of elements has its own electronic or electromagnetic signature, so that the heart is actually able to perceive. It picks up these electromagnetic fields, and it is routed through the heart to the brain for analysis. But when that electromagnetic field is encountered by the heart, we experience it as emotions. So what's really intriguing is to begin to do this thing that we all kind of do unconsciously anyway, but begin to do it consciously, to everything that you encounter in your life, that you just look at it and allow yourself to notice how it appears visually, and then just ask yourself, how does it feel? And in that moment, that focuses the attention of the human organism on that electromagnetic signature coming from that thing as it passes through the heart, and you will experience this burst of feeling that may not have a language for it or words for it, because we're fairly stunted in being able to articulate in that realm. But nevertheless, there is this feeling that everything has. So what we really do then is rekindle the capacity of the heart to respond to what's presented to the senses. And that begins to open up this whole realm of perception through the heart. I mean, the heart's been found to store memories just like the brain does. It has neurotransmitters just like the brain does. It has quite a number of neurons just like the brain does that are connected in synapses. And so it's a much more sophisticated organ, both of perception and cognition, than we've been led to believe. And that shift from looking at it as a pump to thinking that the brain is the seat of consciousness is a very significant shift. And in fact, people at the Heart Math Institute in California and a lot of other researchers have been doing really sophisticated work with this for some time now. And what's really true is that consciousness in the human being is actually highly mobile. It can relocate to any of the large biological oscillators in the body, such as the heart or the GI tract or the brain, which are the three primary ones, and it can habituate to those locations. And how it perceives the world is altered by where it habituates itself. And interestingly, looking in, you know, the indigenous cultures, the Tarahumara Indians talked about that. They said that these parts of the body have their own soul, but the most powerful one is the one that belongs to the heart, and the brain is much less powerful. So the knowledge base is there. The Greeks analyzed it in a huge amount of detail, so we're kind of playing catch-up in this realm, in a sense.
Well, I think you are passing for ghetto.
Listening is waiting.
You came here to be real, but you're not.
Listening is waiting.
How can I love you if I don't even know you?
Now you are knee deep in your head's footnotes.
Let me see your pain.
I'll take your complex out of context.
Let me know the geography of your hell.
I've been listening to you talking in your sleep. It's a strange poetry. You're always running from something, it seems. Let me chase away whatever's hurting you. Just have to ask it of me. My love is more real than all your dreams. Cause I've been thinking about leaving my fingerprints on your beard. I've been thinking about leaving my fingerprints on your beard. I've been thinking about leaving my fingerprints on your beard. It's like church now. Remove your mask. See, all you gotta do is ask me. I'll give you all the love life allows. So calm down now. Remove your mask. See, all you gotta do is ask me. I'll give you all the love life allows. All you gotta do is ask me. 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 All you gotta do.
What does this feeling mean to you? Both to be seen and to be seen through. What does this feeling mean to you? Both to be seen and to be seen through. See, lover is like an ocean. In a state of withdrawal, a fish full of emotion and the burning wall. Love is like an ocean in a state of withdrawal.
Right when it was starting to feel real.
Yeah, it was starting to feel real.
Right when it was starting to feel real.
To feel real.
How you gotta do?
How you gonna deal when it's starting to feel real?
the fundamental number one thing is that indigenous peoples experience nature as alive and intelligent and aware. And the mechanistic paradigm that began to emerge from the Enlightenment on really has tended to view nature as dead and unthinking, just kind of like that we're on a ball of rock, which is essentially a resource base hurtling around the sun, the only intelligent life form that there is. You know, and that perspective that we're trained in from the moment we begin schooling is incredibly unusual. It's the first time in the history of human habitation of Earth that any culture has believed anything remotely like that. You know, and James Hillman came up with a marvelous point about it. He said, you see, they had to convince us that the Earth was dead because otherwise they could not begin their autopsy in earnest. That phrasing, I mean, if we're looking at the dismantling of the world itself, and the reason why industrialists and scientists can get away with it so easily is because we're all trained that the Earth basically doesn't have any feelings, that it's not alive or aware. And so it's that one fundamental difference that separates out indigenous peoples and even ancient cultures from our culture now.
Sure looks like it's going to rain. That's what I was saying out loud. But inside, my mind was working too fast. Or so it seemed. Nothing's accomplished by this. Nothing that makes sense. Let me tell you about my mind. It seems to turn in circles that get tighter and tighter as my thoughts swing upward and inward, as I reach into what might as well be upward as downward, as I think in endless chain reactions that tighten up tighter and tighter until I want to. But I mustn't do that. I'll loosen up. Take it easy. Just relax. Have to appear calm. Even though I know it's a lie, I'm not calm. Not inside. I'm a nervous wreck inside. Sure, you think I'm calm. Outwardly, I appear so. But you should see the inside of me. Here. Come on in. At first, it doesn't make any sense. Which is perfectly all right. What bothers me is when it does make sense. Like behind this door. Hear that? There's a rhythm. There's a rhythm that you can count. Which makes sense. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. And this makes me think of somebody who invented numbers, which also makes sense. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Wonder if he had much trouble inventing those numbers. Wonder if he had trouble with zero. Pretty hard to imagine nothing. Nothing. No thing. No me. No you. No world. Nothing. Which doesn't make sense. Which frightens me. I can't stand things that frighten me. That don't make any sense. Come on, let's get out of my brain. Quick. Quick through the door here. Now. Now through this one.
Huh?
I said, sure looks like it's gonna rain.
Oh, I don't think so.
Paradise. is exactly like where you are right now. One of those abstract chances. And he was going. And Fred said, I think he's in some kind of pain. I think it's a pain cry. And I said, pain cry? Then language. And I was saying, I wanted you, and I was looking for you, but I couldn't find you, I couldn't find you. And he said, hey, you talking to me? Are you just practicing for one of those performances of yours? Huh? It's a virus. Tell the judge that it was you. And I had to sell the car and go to Florida because that's just my way of saying
that I love you.
Had to call you at the crack of dawn and list the times that I've been wrong. That's just my way of saying that I'm sorry.
It's a job.
Helen, it's all right.
Is it all right?
Don't be sad about your chosen path and where it's taken you thus far. 'Cause this is what you did, and that is who you are. And it's all right.
Is it all right?
Yes, it's all right.
Is it all right?
Yes, it's all right.
Is it all right?
For if love knew what was good for it, it would play it passing for song, fill an empty house with harmony, and play on after things go wrong. Days and opinions and all of fate's minions tend to fade like the bang of a gong. There's a ballad to break any fall you see, and a rhythm to still any row. There's a melody for every malady. You're listening to one right now. Art is made up, but artificial it ain't. Art is love and clay and words and paint. Play on. If you're all contrite, what's life without a few regrets? If you didn't fuck up, you weren't doing it right. Art is made up, but artificial it ain't. Art is love and clay and words and paint.